this episode of The Commercial Break.
I do feel like they had a rehearsal space that was cold. That sounds familiar to me. Mm. So I'm going to go with that one.
You're correct.
Yeah.
You're correct.
Yeah. I think that...
Although it seems like any of them could be true.
Of them could be true. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you don't sleep in your car when you're on tour. You're in a van or you're on a bus or something. I mean, you could sleep in the van, but you don't sleep in your own car. It's not like you're following the guys around. I'll catch up with you. Hey, it's me, Eddie Vedder, in my station wagon. I mean... It just doesn't make much sense. Yeah.
The next episode of The Commercial Break starts now.
Oh, yeah, cats and kittens, welcome back to The Commercial Break. I'm Brian Green. This is my dear friend and the co-host of this show, Kristen Joy Hoadley. Best to you, Chris.
Best to you, Brian.
Best to you out there in the podcast and streaming universe. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Here we are again, stream number two of the day. That's okay. I forgot the noise. That's okay.
I know. I noticed that.
Yeah. There you go. All right. Yeah. I'll put that in post.
A little
Fuck
dolphin.
It. We'll do it in post. We'll do it live. But once you're doing it live, it's just a whole different thing. You can't go backwards. I guess I could restart the show, but then that would sound stupid to the people who are watching live. Whatever the fuck. Who cares? No one cares. No one cares. Well, it's Friday after Thanksgiving if you're listening to the recorded version of this. If you're not, you're watching us on streaming, then it's not Friday after Thanksgiving. We'll put it that way. And I associate that day, that particular day, that Friday after Thanksgiving, with music. Because when we were kids, it would be a popular thing, even for young kids, like 8th, 9th, 10th grade, to get tickets to go see Drivin' and Cryin'.
Oh, yeah.
At the Fox Theater. It was a benefit show that Drivin' and Cryin' did every year for like 12 years on that Friday after Thanksgiving. And even when they stopped doing it, then there was always some kind of music. It was a good night to go to the bars.
Well, it was. Hang out. I remember doing that and getting together with all your friends, drinking,
people come
smoking,
in town,
music.
All of it. All of it. Maybe a little Rochambeau, a little kids' margarita, a little hoity-toity. You know what I'm saying? A little bit of the old Colombian marching powder. I don't do it, but I knew people who did do it.
Yes.
And they made me do it. And then I also knew people who didn't make me do it, but I did it behind their backs. That's the kind of mean drug it was. It would take you over. Anyway, music and that and Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving, go hand in hand. It's just for me, at least. It was always live music the day after Thanksgiving. So it's befitting that Chrissy and I are watching the videos like everybody else is of Stephen Wilson Jr. from the CMAs.
We're on last night.
Last night as we're recording this. The CMAs are not something that I would normally watch. Mm-hmm. I'm not, I don't mind country. Quite frankly, country music is pop music. Pop music is country music. It all kind of sounds the same now. There is no difference. And there's good country music, like there's good other kinds of music too. I don't consider Stephen Wilson Jr. a country artist, but that's my perspective. That's my purview on the whole situation.
But you found him a year ago.
That's right. Keen-eyed listeners will know that I was popping around the internet, and I had been following 3 years ago, I talked about how down the street from where we're recording this, a guy that I had known many years ago from the music scene owned a print
Jam
shop.
Jamland Productions. Shout out.
Jamland Productions. Shout out. Old school Jamland. Where's that Pete? Pete still owns Jamland Productions. I don't know how it's doing. I think they're doing bingo nights now or something like that. But shout out Jamland Productions. I knew a guy who went on to own a print shop, like an actual print shop, like printing shit, like t-shirts and hats and stickers and all this other stuff. And then he moved his print shop into his house. And when he moved his print shop into his house, he was such a lover of music. And he knew like Angie Aparo, Francisco Vidal. He was big into like the Southeastern music circuit when I was, you know,
jamming.
Yeah. When Chopper Johnson and 33 Penis were taking over the Southeastern music circuit. By Southeastern, I mean mainly our practice space, but we were good there. And
sounded great.
He decided he's going to install a bunch of cameras and really super professional audio equipment and was going to invite some of his favorite bands to come play in his fucking basement. And I've seen pictures of like tour buses rolling up to this residential neighborhood. It's affluent, but it's a residential neighborhood, and unloading their shit to go into the print shop, quote unquote. So you can now go to YouTube. Live at the Print Shop is the name of the channel. It's the name of the Instagram. It's the name of everything. Give them some love because we're about to play some of their stuff. But he saw Stephen Wilson Jr. in a bar in Nashville, and Stephen Wilson Jr. was becoming big in Nashville in like 22 and 23 after he put out an album called Son of a Dad, after his father passed. And then he went on tour. He was opening up for people and he started to gain some notoriety. Never heard a voice like this before. The way he plays guitar is haunting. It's a revelation. He is uniquely original. I mean, I don't know if he can be uniquely original, but he's extraordinarily original in his songwriting, in his music, and it is beautiful. And I don't know anybody who I've let listen to this that doesn't think so. It's just,
I agree.
And he's incredible. He's incredible singer-songwriter. And he's in his late 40s. And now just coming into his own.
I love that.
I love it too. He's got a very unique aesthetic to his band, to his merch, he's unique in all ways. And I love it. And I love him. And he recorded an album live at the Print Shop where he did a version of Stand By Me as a cover. Mm-hmm. And then he did a song that he had not done on an album. And it's called I'm a Song. And that song to me, the song I'm a Song, is just so fucking incredible that anytime I listen to it, it gives me chills. And still, 150 times in, it gives me chills. So I'm going to play it here on the show. I don't know if this is a lot. I don't care, really. You know, whatever. What are they going to do? You know, what are you going to do? Take down the commercial break? Stronger men than you have tried. So I want to play this live at the Print Show. Oh, sorry. It just kind of started there. But let me go over the explanation, because he's going to talk about his dad and how his dad thought this was his favorite song. So this is I'm a Song from Stephen Wilson Jr. live at the Print Shop. Go check this out on YouTube. Give them the views too. All right, here it is.
Yeah, I'll play it. It's a tough one for me to play. But I'll do it anyway. This is called I'm a Song, and it was my dad's favorite song of mine. He told me it was his favorite song ever. This was like one of the last conversations we ever had, and this is one of those, why don't you just sing it conversation songs, and this is one of those songs that I told him, no, I don't do that. So I'm going to do that. Sip of brandy when your soul is bare and you need to share your heart. I'm the words that'll hit you, that'll get you where you're going so you never go there alone. I'm the melody glued to the memory that you can't shake when it comes on. I'm the part of you that you listen to riding in the radio all night long. I'm a song. Memory that you can't shake when it comes on. listen to riding in the radio all night long. Part of you that you listen to riding in the radio all night long. I'm a song. Oh, oh, I'm a song. Oh, oh, I'm a song.
Incredible. Yeah.
I had no words. No words. No words do that song justice. It's an incredibly beautiful song written beautifully.
And the music that goes with it,
yes,
too.
And he's making all that noise with just one guitar and nylon strings. It is quite amazing. It is, like, very few people play nylon strings, first of all. Second of all, I know why he's playing the nylon strings, because it's the percussion, the bass, and the guitar at the same time. Mm. He's keeping time by snapping the guitar like that. He's using the nylon strings to give it that deep, rich sound. He's using a guitar that is old and rickety because it probably has some, it's probably comforting to him, but then there's only that kind of guitar can make that kind of sound. And then he's putting a voice on top of it that you mentioned, Eddie Vedder. It does have an Eddie Vedder-ish quality to it. He's singing through his nose and with a closed throat. But, you know, he grew up listening to the same music we listen to.
Yeah, yeah, the 90s, you know,
yeah,
alternative stuff along with some country. I mean, it's kind of got like a little Willie Nelson in there, too.
Bruce Springsteen is one that comes to mind. But then now he's covered Smashing Pumpkins. He's covered, I think he did an Alice in Chains song. I think he did another one. He's covering a lot of the songs that we grew up with that you can tell. I think he does. I think if you asked him to, he could cover a Pearl Jam song pretty well. But he's not going to do that because he also knows that his voice resembles Eddie Vedder and he doesn't want to come across as a parody. But mark my words, Stephen Wilson Jr. will do a Pearl Jam cover at some time in the near future. And we're all going to be blown the fuck away. Because also, the way that he's using his voice is unlike Eddie Vedder's. He's just got a tone to it that I don't, it's just different. It's different. Anyway, Stephen Wilson Jr. is a revelation to me. I haven't liked music this much in a long time. And it just hits me in the giggle spot.
The rest of the world's catching on.
The rest of the world's catching on. CMA's got him first, but, you know, it won't be long before he is everywhere.
Yeah.
His tickets are hard to get. They are very expensive. He came to Athens, sold out the Georgia Theater, and I thought, okay, that's close enough. He hasn't been, I don't think he's been to Atlanta as a main act yet. Because he says when he's playing the Print Shop, and this came out in 24, he says this is the first time I have played music in Atlanta. I've been here, but this is the first time I played music in Atlanta. So when I looked for the Georgia Theater tickets, they were like $400 for standing room. Just at the Georgia Theater, there are no seats. It's standing room. That's what you do. I mean, up in the balcony, I suppose. But so $400 to go see Stephen Wilson Jr. probably would have been worth every dime.
Oh, yeah. You know, that was a great show.
Yeah. This is like a generational talent, in my opinion. So last night on the CMAs, he does a cover that he did at the Print Shop. And it was Stand By Me. So now let me see. We'll play that one while we're on Stephen Wilson Jr. kick. Let's play that one. Let me see if I can cue that up here. Here you go. Mm-hmm. For those of you listening, guitar only. Him and a guitar.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in the night is come. Now the land is dark and I'm on.
He's still got that guitar.
Is the only light you ever see.
It's a safety blanket.
Yeah.
No, I won't be afraid. No, I won't shed a single tear. Just as long as you, just as long as you stand by. Every sky that we look upon should ever tumble and fall. If those mountains, they ever crumble into the sea, into the sea. No, I won't be afraid. No, I won't be afraid. Won't you stand by me? Won't you stand by me? Yeah, won't you? Yeah, won't you? Won't you stand
generational talent. A generational talent.
Yeah.
For sure. This guy is out of control. The only thing that I worry about with Stephen Wilson Jr., first of all, I want to point out that he's using so much reverb on his voice. If that stadium that he was in right then was empty, his voice would sound like that. He's putting so much reverb on it. It's a masterstroke on how to use effects correctly.
Yeah.
And his voice needs that to make it so, like, in your face. You feel like you're in a huge room listening to someone without a microphone. And someone at the
goosebumps.
Top of their game.
Yeah.
It does. The only thing that concerns me about Stephen Wilson Jr. is that we are seeing him at the very tippy top of his game. And I wonder how long he can keep it up with that voice screaming like that. Like, I hope he can do it, but we've seen other screamers in the past not keep up with that kind of vocal ideation. But, you know, we'll see. I hope. I love Stephen Wilson Jr. I've loved him since the moment I caught him and I turned Chrissy onto it. I was like, you got to listen to this guy. I started sending it to everybody. I was kind of like a little obsessed, actually. I was like, you got to listen to this guy. You got to listen to this guy. I sent it to my brother and everyone that I've sent it to is like, oh my God, that's crazy. And I'm like, yeah, I know, right? Where'd this guy come from? He's our age. He was a chemical engineer for a cereal company or something, like a food company. He was a Golden Glove boxer. He grew up poor. His dad raised him. His mom was in a series of abusive relationships. Real sad story, but he managed to pull himself up and out, and he became a very well-paid chemical engineer, food engineer, whatever, for a food company. And then he was writing songs on the side for people in Nashville until somebody, one of the engineers in the studio, said,
You gotta
be the voice of these songs.
Yeah.
And he's like, nah, man, look at me. I'm 43 years old. You think I'm going to be a fucking rock star? And he's like, yes, I do. You need to do these songs. Why are you giving them to other people? And he took a chance and wrote an album. It did okay, mildly, in Nashville. And then the second one, Son of a Dad, I think that's when people really started taking notice. Do yourself a favor. Get into Steven Wilson Jr. Those are two of 12. He's got 30 songs out there now. But 24 of them are just beautiful. And Live at the Print Shop is probably the best live version of some of these songs that I've seen. So go watch that.
Yeah, it's about, an hour long? And just
an
listen
hour long.
To it. Yeah.
6-8 songs, something like that.
He tells a lot about his life.
Yeah, he does. It's beautiful. Anyway, okay, listen, I couldn't let it slide. I had to talk about Steven Wilson Jr. again. I tried to get him on the show. We reached out to his people. We reached out to the guy from Live at Print Shop. In typical commercial break fashion, no one responded to us. No, I think Steven Wilson's people did get back to us. And they said, listen, thanks for asking. But right now, he's got a lot on his plate.
Yeah.
And right now, he's letting the music speak for him. And that's okay. I haven't seen him do too many interviews. I think he was on two late night shows. I think he went on Jimmy Kimmel. I think he was on Fallon. And then I also believe he did one podcast. But of course, it wasn't ours. But he's not the shits and giggles kind of guy. Maybe this is just not the place for him to come air his, musical laundry. Though, Steven, always an open door, If you want to come stream in front of six people, we're here for you.
Yes.
We're here for you. If you need that kind of promotion,
let us know.
Yeah. If you need a technically disastrous show to show up to, I would love to get Steven Wilson here and have him be the first artist that plays for us.
We wanted to do that.
We wanted to do it.
Music series.
Yeah. I said, hey, reach out to Steven Wilson's people. Tell him we have a studio in Atlanta that's pretty nice and they have actual engineers that can help him set up his shit. And he can come and he can talk and he can play us a few songs. But I can also understand that when you're on the rise like this, there's probably a lot that's pulling at you and your management. They're doing the right thing when they're saying no to the commercial breaks of the world. They're like, you don't need them. You need to focus. You're playing the CMAs, Jimmy Fallon, and Jimmy Kimmel. You don't need the commercial break. But I say all that to say that I got mad respect for what's going on with Steven Wilson Jr. Hey, Lauren. Lauren's on our stream now.
Lauren.
At the commercial break on YouTube, youtube.com/@thecommercialbreak or /thecommercialbreak. And if you want to know when we're going live in the future, follow us at the commercial break on Instagram, and we'll let you know just a couple minutes ahead of time. Usually Tuesdays through Thursdays, sometime between noon and 3 p.m., Chrissy and I are going to make an effort to be here streaming the show. And then, of course, you can always listen a couple days later on the RSS feed, as you always have been. But get involved in the conversation. Last episode we recorded, we had a lot of people commenting and in the comments section. And also, we are working on, I'm not going to promise when, but in the next couple of weeks, we'd like to be able to invite people on to jump in with their cameras.
Yeah, maybe we'll do a little
test.
A test, and maybe a holiday.
Well, we can always go stream and then not run it on the RSS feed if it doesn't work out. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so maybe what we'll do is we'll do a special holiday something or other. So just stay tuned. Follow us at the commercial break. We'll, of course, let people know. And maybe in that case, the smaller numbers, the better, while we work out all the technical issues. Yeah, I still haven't done it. I don't know how to do it. But a few people in the stream right now, thanks if you're streaming. Thanks always, as always, in the podcast universe. Let's take a break and we're going to play a game.
Yes.
When we get back.
Hey, it's Rachel, your new voice of God here on TCB. And just like you, I'm wondering just how much longer this podcast can continue. Let's all rejoice that another episode has made it to your ears, and I'll rejoice that my check is in the mail. Speaking of mail, get your free TCB sticker in the mail by going to tcbpodcast.com and visiting the Contact Us page. You can also find the entire commercial break library, audio and video, just in case you want to look at Chrissy, at tcbpodcast.com. Want your voice to be on an episode of the show? leave us a message at 212-433-3TCB. That's 212-433-3822. Tell us how much you love us, and we'll be sure to let the world know on a future episode. Or you can make fun of us. That'd be fine, too. We might not air that, but maybe. Oh, and if you're shy, that's okay. Just send a text. We'll respond. Now I'm going to go check the mailbox for payment while you check out our sponsors. And then we'll return to this episode of The Commercial Break.
All right. You know that guy? Our fucking the people who represent this country are a bunch of fucking shitheads. Because I just read a story. You know that Dan Crenshaw, the guy who wears the eye patch?
Yeah.
The representative wears the eye patch? He's no longer allowed in Mexico. After an alcohol-related incident.
Oh,
he can't go to fucking Mexico. He's a congressman.
Oh, my
Unbelievable.
God. What you have to do there to get kicked out. Wow.
Yeah. I've been kicked out of a few places in Mexico, but not the actual country. Yeah. But I guess when you're a congressman, you do have a lot more eyeballs on you. All right, let's play a game. Chrissy's got a music-related Two Truths and a Lie.
I do, in the vein of, first of all, everything 90s is new again.
Absolutely.
And everybody loves the 90s. Yeah. And in the vein of just listening to Steven and kind of the Eddie Vedder-ish, you know, a little voice like that, it reminds me that you are such a huge Pearl Jam fan.
I am.
You are. And we even went to the show.
We did. We went to the show together. That's right.
That was so much fun.
It was a ton of fun. Actually, the other day, my iPhone
It pulled up
popped
pictures.
Up pictures. Yeah, I think because we had been at the State Farm Arena.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like concerts at State Farm Arena, which were mainly just pictures of us at Pearl Jam, but then there were a couple other pictures of other shows I've seen. So, okay, I'm up for this.
Nice.
Let's
so
do
it's,
it.
It's a two lies and a fact, Pearl Jam and 90s edition.
All right, let's see how good my brain is working today.
Okay, let's see. All right, here we go.
Yeah.
Okay, this is where I'm going to say three different statements.
Okay.
You're going to tell me which one is the fact.
Okay.
Okay, the first statement is, this is the name of this little round is 10 out of 10.
Okay.
Okay. A, the band wanted every album title to be a number at first. Okay. B, 10 was named after NBA player Mookie Blaylock's jersey.
Mm-hmm.
C, fans originally thought the album cover was a swimsuit ad.
It would be B.
You're correct.
Yes. Mookie Blaylock.
Yeah, tell us more about that.
So Pearl Jam was actually named the Mookie Blaylock Band.
Ah.
That was their original name. But because Mookie Blaylock did not know who the fuck Pearl Jam would become, he did not care for them using his name, and they got a copyright infringement. They got a cease and desist from the attorneys for Mookie Blaylock, who was a Hawks player, an Atlanta Hawks player,
that's number 10. I
yes. And Jeff Ament, who's the bassist, was a huge NBA fan. And if you look anytime behind Pearl Jam, behind Jeff on his bass stack, the speakers behind him, you will see that he has these little bobbleheads, these mm-hmm. NBA bobbleheads that he'll switch out. But Mookie is always there. So there's always a mad respect for Mookie Blaylock. And if you are a true Pearl Jam like aficionado and collector, you can find a poster with the Mookie Blaylock band named on it.
Really?
From like the first 6 months of them in existence. But not much else because, of course, they got the cease and desist, so they don't put out merch like that anymore.
Did they become friends with Mookie?
I think they had.
They had to.
I think they did. Yes. I think they did. Yeah.
They
so,
had to.
There you go.
Well, good. There you go. Band. Okay. Here's round three. Even flow, even chaos.
Oh.
Okay. A, the band recorded Even Flow more than 50 times. B, they intended it to be a reggae song. Even flow,
thoughts arrive like butterflies, Eman. Call your mama.
I love it. Okay, C, where the lyrics were written while Eddie was floating in a sensory tank.
Huh.
Mm. Yeah,
I don't believe that any of the songs on 10 were recorded 50 times. I think this, and I certainly don't think it's supposed to be a reggae song. That's
that
a pretty obvious lie. So it's got to be the sensory tank or A. I imagine that it's the sensory tank, though. I don't recall reading about this.
I like the sensory tank.
But it's they recorded it?
But they recorded it more
50
than
times.
More than 50 times.
Wow. Listen, I do know.
Like for the one album? Man.
So a lot of the songs on 10 were written before Eddie even was even part of the band. They were written on a demo tape They sent the tape to Eddie, who was living down in San Diego, surfing mainly. This is why I think the sensory tank made sense. And he was a gas station attendant. And
he
was a gas station attendant. That's what he was doing for a living. And he lived in a tiny room that he'd sublet with like six other surfer dudes. And he would write the lyrics on the walls. He would write some of these lyrics in notebooks and on the walls. And so when somebody told Mother Love Bone was essentially Pearl Jam, Jeff Ament, Mike McCready, Stone Gossard, they were all kind of traveling in the same circles. Mother Love Bone, the lead singer died, and they were left with nothing to do. They got together. They started writing songs. They were looking for a singer. Someone who knew someone, I think it was someone having to do with Red Hot Chili Peppers, sent the tape down to Eddie Vedder. Mm. They knew he was a singer. And they said, hey, listen, you know, listen to this and let us know. And he recorded over it. He dubbed it with the tape in the background, essentially. Played the tape, then dubbed his own voice, wrote a lot of those lyrics off the rip or read it off his wall or out of his notebook, sent it back to them. And so my understanding is that that album was recorded in about a 10-day period, totally, with Brendan O'Brien, just like, boom. But, you know, you could do it 50 times in 10 days, I suppose. Or it just took 50 times to get it right.
Right.
I do have heard Mike McCready say that the guitar solos in that, which are now world famous, you listen to Even Flow, you listen to the guitar solos, that they were, it took a long time to get those down. But I didn't know 50 times. That's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, you're doing well so far.
Thank you.
Here we go.
We're doing a little history lesson.
I know. I enjoy this. I knew that.
Thank you.
I knew this would be a good one for you. Okay. Round four.
Yes.
Jeremy spoke ... then MTV panicked.
Yes.
Is the name of this. Okay.
Okay.
A, MTV banned the Jeremy video for showing Eddie eating raw fish. B, the video director later quit the music industry from the stress. Or C, the original ending was even darker than the final cut.
I think that this has got to be C, though I think there is some truth to the rumor of B.
With the video director
quitting
from the stress.
Yes. Yes. Because it was a big deal
really?
At the time. Yes. Even Flo, I mean, Jeremy.
Jeremy, yeah.
Was one of the most popular videos MTV had ever seen. But MTV got so much heat for that particular video because, of course, it's the story of a child who shoots himself in class. Mm-hmm. And the video in and of itself, the one that ran, is pretty graphic. It shows him blowing out his brains and then blood all over the children. But it doesn't show the actual like blowing out of the brains. But I think the ending may have been darker, the original version.
Yeah, they're right.
Yeah.
The ending, the original ending was even darker.
But the director got so much heat for that video. He went on to do movies, I believe, but he got so much heat for that he considered leaving the music industry, like the video industry.
Yeah.
Because it was a difficult time. And little fun fact, that was the last video that Pearl Jam would do for MTV or anywhere else. For a very long time, for like 23 years. So
they were just done.
They were done. They didn't think it was necessary to make videos.
And
for
it
MTV.
Wasn't.
It wasn't. They did just fine.
Yeah,
they did okay.
Exactly.
They did okay for themselves. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, here we go. Round five.
Okay.
Vetter's Adventures.
Oh.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, I think I know where this is going. Okay, go.
Okay. A, Eddie Vedder once lost his wallet surfing before a show.
Okay.
B, he performed part of a concert while hanging upside down. C, he toured with a portable sauna for vocal warm-ups.
C sounds a little too pretentious, though.
Like they keep throwing in the sauna.
Yeah, they keep on throwing in saunas. And I don't know. I don't know, but it doesn't sound like Eddie Vedder to me. I would say, he certainly has performed parts of concerts hanging upside down, so that sounds like it might be true. And it also sounds like it might be true that he lost a wallet before he surfed because he's a big surfer. So I'm just going to say A for shits and giggles.
Okay, it was B. You're
okay.
Right.
All right, there
you
go.
And we do know about his climbing and hanging upside down.
I saw it.
You saw it live.
I saw it live, right?
At the Fox?
I saw it at the Fox Theater, and then I saw it again at Lollapalooza. Mm-hmm. Eventually they put a stop to it.
Yeah.
People threatened to pull gigs. Because the insurance companies were saying that they weren't not going to insure him if he, in fact, got up off. If he got off stage, then it was over. Like, game over. They were going to stop the show. And the bandmates themselves were pressuring Eddie to stop it because they were really concerned.
He was so into it.
He was so into it. But, you know, Stone Gossard said, he's going to die in front of us, and it's going to be the most tragic thing that ever happened.
Right.
So I think he did that for the first 2 or 3 years. Of course, the Even Flow video is or Alive are the two videos where you think of where Eddie's just acting like a maniac running around. And, you know, that was his thing. That was his thing. Yeah.
Okay. Well, good job. Here we go. Well, this I think we've talked about this before. But
okay, go.
Round 6 was Ticketmaster Wars.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
that
was a big deal.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
We'll skip that one. We'll skip that one. I mean,
Pearl Jam knew Ticketmaster was nefarious.
They testified before Congress about high ticket fees.
Yes. And,
which are still around. But.
And for 2 years, for two tours, they did it themselves.
Yeah.
They did their own ticketing. And that turned into a major disaster for them. That was a real problem. They had a lot of issues because Ticketmaster just does what they do very well. But they knew that the $3 fee that Ticketmaster was charging was highway robbery. And they hated it. And they felt that it was rigged and that ticket brokers were getting in the middle. This is like the baby ticket brokers, like, you know, individual humans that were like buying 5 or 6 tickets at a time.
Right, that would stand outside Turtles.
Yes, that would stand outside Turtles or the Fox Theater or whatever. You know, they knew. And they went to Congress and they tried to get it stopped. But, of course, Congress in its infinite wisdom, 29 years later, still doing the same shit. So now Congress is like, oh, yeah, Ticketmaster sucks. Oh, they do? They did back then, too.
They still haven't done anything different.
Not a goddamn thing.
Now they
thing.
Just include it's an all-inclusive fee. But
in the UK,
it's still high.
In the United Kingdom, thank you, my UK brethren. In the United Kingdom, they are signing into law this week a law that says it is illegal to sell tickets higher than face value.
Good.
Essentially killing the aftermarket, or at least the public aftermarket for tickets. There's always going to be a black market
for it.
Yeah, you can call your buddy and he can say, hey, you know, I'll charge you an extra $200 to buy these tickets. But it's a first step in combating what has become an out of control situation with these ticket fees.
God, it really is.
It's nuts. Okay.
That's nuts. Okay. Here we go. Round 7, alternative 90s madness.
It sounds like an episode of The Love Connection.
She showed her knee.
She showed her knee. I see a nipple.
Okay, here we go. A, the first Limp Bizkit album was produced by Eddie Vedder.
Nope.
B, radio stations sometimes labeled Pearl Jam as drug music. C, Nirvana once opened for Pearl Jam at a country fair.
Okay, this has got to be B, because I don't believe that Pearl Jam ever opened up for Nirvana, and I certainly know that Eddie Vedder did not produce Limp Bizkit's first album.
Thank God.
Yeah, thank God. So
true.
That's got to be B.
They sometimes labeled
it drug music.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which so, sounds right.
So a little history lesson in how the 90s went down, why this music became so popular. Atlanta has a lot to do with that.
That's true. 99X.
Because there was a radio station in Seattle, a college radio station, I believe. And then there was a station in Los Angeles. But here on the East Coast, 99X was our alternative station. And it was the first station to flip into what they called alternative format, alternative rock or alternative format. And they... A bunch of rogue employees at this radio station owned by Cumulus now, but by Dickey Broadcasting then, literally got together and overnight found music from Seattle and other places that were being played in like college stations and, you know, under the underground scene. And
God, they did that.
It was crazy. If you listen to the story of it, there's like literally a documentary that was made about this. It's a shitty YouTube documentary, but all of the players involved, Leslie Fram and all these people were... These program directors, they got together, and I still remember the time when they flipped that music,
Me too.
They flipped that station. I was listening when they flipped that station. It happened at like, I don't know, like 12 at night or something like
that.
They
usually do it at midnight,
And I still remember, and overnight, it became a sensation here in the city and throughout the country, and everybody soon followed.
It's
Within
huge.
A year, the alternative stations were everywhere because it became very popular music. They were playing Nirvana when no one else was playing Nirvana and Smashing Pumpkins. If I'm not mistaken, I can't remember what the first song on 99X was played.
You just said it the other day.
Yes, it's not Nevermind.
I thought it was maybe a Pearl Jam.
It wasn't a Pearl Jam song. First song.
Yeah, we just talked about that a little while back.
On 99X Atlanta. Video Killed the Radio Star.
Really?
Okay, well, there
I thought
you
that
go.
That was the first one on MTV.
That was the first one on MTV also. Mm. But it was Video Killed the Radio Star. But anyway, in that first couple of minutes, so Nirvana was played also. But not Nirvana's Nevermind, Nirvana's Bleach album, because I don't think Nevermind was out yet.
True.
Because 99X came online. Oh, maybe it was. It was October 26, 1992. Anyway, okay. Anyway, that's a little history lesson.
I love it.
Atlanta, we were early in on the game.
Yes, we were.
Yeah. Now we just play shitty dance music and 80s pop music.
I know. It's
bad. There's no more radio stations left. 99X is still around, by the way.
There's a station out of Minneapolis. It's an NPR station. It's called The Current. Jeff and I listen to it.
It's good?
And it's independent and it's great.
Yeah. I don't know if it could convince me to turn off my satellite radio, but... there's just no place. There's no kingmakers anymore. Maybe there shouldn't be, but there's no kingmakers anymore. 99X was a kingmaker. If you got your music played on 99X,
I think you turned onto that station.
Then. Yeah. Okay.
Round eight.
Yeah.
Soundgarden, Sound Off.
Ooh. Dun, 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 dun.
The rivalry.
Yeah. The rivalry was really Nirvana and Pearl Jam.
That's true.
Because Soundgarden and Pearl Jam were friendly from the get, but.
Okay. A. Chris Cornell and Eddie Vedder once recording an entire album of lullabies. B, the Temple of the Dog album featured early Pearl Jam members. C, Soundgarden and Pearl Jam shared a rehearsal warehouse.
Okay, well, of course it's B because Temple of the Dog.
I love that Temple of the Dog.
It's an excellent album.
God,
it's an excellent album.
Still to this day.
Yeah, it's one of the first CDs that I ever bought after kind of alternative music started to take over. And it's an excellent album from beginning to end. And it is Eddie Vedder's debut with Pearl Jam members. Here's a fun fact. Before one lick of 10 was recorded, Hunger Strike
was recorded.
I'm going hungry. Yeah, that is Eddie Vedder's debut, essentially, on the scene. And he recorded that with Chris Cornell.
I remember hearing that, and I was like, what is this?
What is that?
Good.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think the song came out before Pearl Jam's 10 came out. So people kind of knew that he was on the scene long before. But those videos, it's at that time period, like I think those videos all started to come out right or within weeks of each other.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it. I like this.
All right. You're doing
well. I'm winning.
Well. You are winning.
Winning.
Hashtag winning.
Hashtag winning.
Okay, here we go. Round nine, 90s fashion crimes.
Oh.
Of course, it involves a little flannel.
Of course.
Okay. A, flannel shirts surged in price because of Pearl Jam and Nirvana. B, Adidas released an official Pearl Jam sneaker. C, Eddie Vedder had a contract with Levi's.
Okay, Eddie Vedder never had a contract with Levi's. If you know anything, if you even know like 10% of history about Pearl Jam, then you know that there's no contract with Levi's. He wasn't a fashion model. He was the anti-fashion model.
Yeah.
I can imagine that flannel got hot to trot right after.
You're correct. Yeah. Yes.
So
flannel. God, it was everywhere. The Doc Martens, the flannel.
It was everywhere. Mm. I did not. Actually, fun fact about Brian, I never got into the flannel.
You didn't?
No, I don't even think I owned a flannel
until many
years later. Doc Martens, yes. I was all about the Doc Martens, for sure. But I never wore like flannel. I never like wrapped one around my waist.
Yeah, that's
wasn't my thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I was a little bit more fashionable than that. A little bit. Not much, but a little bit. Little bit.
Okay. All right, round 10. Are we good on time?
Yeah, we're good. Let's do this one and then we'll take a break.
Okay. Round 10, MTV shenanigans.
Oh, the shenanigans of MTV.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay. A, MTV gave Pearl Jam Best New Artist, but they refused the trophy.
Uh-huh.
B, Eddie Vedder once showed up to the VMAs in shorts and hiking boots. C, MTV once censored a speech where Eddie protested microwaves.
Okay, that's not true.
What? How did that come up?
I think Eddie had a few protests in his time, but I don't think it had to do with microwaves. I know for a fact that he used to wear shorts and hiking boots a lot, especially during the early days. And I don't think they refused that artist award. Mm-hmm. I think they actually accepted the artist award. And I think it was the only award they ever accepted from MTV. So it's B.
It is B.
Yes.
You're correct.
Yes.
Ding, ding,
look
ding,
at
ding,
me.
Ding,
I got ding, it. Ding. I'm so good at this.
I
okay.
I know. There's more to come.
All right. We'll be back.
Let me do something Brian has never done. Be brief. Follow us on Instagram at The Commercial Break. Text or call us 212-433-3TCB. That's 212-433-3822. Visit our website, tcbpodcast.com, for all the audio, video, and your free sticker. Then watch all the videos at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak. And finally, share the show. It's the best gift you could give a few aging podcasters. See, Brian? That really wasn't that difficult, now was it? You're welcome.
Okay, we're back. Right. We're playing a little two lies and a truth, whatever the fuck it's called.
Two lies and a fact.
Two lies and a fact. Two yeah. craps and a fact. I don't know.
I could have done fact or crap, but that
we'll play those, that next time.
Yeah,
next time we'll play two facts
too
and a crap.
Easy for you. I've got to make them harder.
Yeah,
for you.
Next time we'll ask the audience to give us two facts
yes.
and a crap,
yes.
and that'll be a fun game to play. And then you and I will have to decipher, and we'll see if we can beat the audience.
Oh, I love that.
Okay, we're playing a '90s music version of this. It's been mainly focused on Pearl Jam mm-hmm. right now. So okay. Go. Let's do this.
Okay. Okay. This is the next round.
Okay.
Peak 90s weirdness.
Oh, all right. I think I can go.
Okay.
I think I can go
you
here.
You got this?
I okay. think I got my 90s pop trivia pretty good.
You do.
Pretty good.
Okay. A is a Connecticut radio station once played Alive on repeat for 24 hours. B, Eddie Vedder once lent his boat to Chris Cornell, .. and it sank. C, 90s parents believed Pearl Jam albums contained subliminal satanic messages.
Okay. I'm sure there's some truth to C, but I do believe that, no, I maybe that's not Pearl Jam. I feel like A has some truth to it, but I think it's probably C.
Mm. Okay. No, you're right, A. Go with your instinct.
Okay, A. Yes.
A, the Connecticut radio station once played Alive on repeat for 24 hours.
Yes. I know that there's some parents who got up in arms about Pearl Jam. I remember reading about it. But A.
Well, it was labeled drug music.
Yeah, it's labeled drug music. That's right. Druggies. Those druggies. Druggies. Yeah. By the way, Pearl Jam's not drug
no.
music. Pink Floyd is drug music, even though they don't want it to be. I will say that there is a story that I remember hearing about a DJ who put it on repeat for 24 hours. And after 12 hours, the station manager came to the Connecticut radio station, because it's like one of those tiny stations,
yeah.
like independent stations, and was like pounding on the door. And I think if I remember correctly, they had to like call the police to get the DJ out of the studio.
Wow, he was standing his
yeah,
ground.
Yeah, he was standing on principle. He's standing on business, that guy was.
I love it.
Yeah, it's good. No one remembers the DJ's name, but hey, you know, whatever.
I
cool.
know, there should be a little documentary about that. The day.
The 24 hours of Alive.
He was probably doing some Columbia
yeah,
marching.
Yeah, that's right. Drug music.
Yeah, it was drug music.
I mean, back then you'd have to press like repeat on the CD player or
yeah,
something.
Every yeah, every time. Okay, next round.
Okay.
Grunge lore.
Oh, here we go.
A, early Pearl Jam rehearsals happened in a basement heated only by amps. B, Eddie once slept in his car for 2 weeks during the first tour.
Okay.
Or C, Jeff Ament used to sew his own wallet chains.
Jeff Ament used to sew his own wallet chain. Sounds like sounds false, but could be true. I do feel like they had a rehearsal space that was cold. That sounds familiar to me.
Mm.
So I'm going to go with that one.
You're correct.
Yeah.
You're correct.
Yeah. I think that.
It seems like any of them could be. True.
Any of them could be true.
Mm-hmm.
But, you don't sleep in your car when you're on tour. You're
yeah.
on a you're in a van or you're on a bus or something. I mean, you could sleep in the van, but
yeah.
you don't sleep in your own car. It's not like you're following the guys around. I'll catch up with you. Hey, it's me, Eddie Vedder, in my station wagon. I mean, it just doesn't make much sense.
No.
Yeah. And you have to remember about Pearl Jam in general is that this is a pretty lickety split. That when we say a lot of times on this show, when we talk to people, overnight sensations never happen overnight.
Sure.
This is one of the rare exceptions to that. Pearl Jam literally put out an album, and within 6 months, they were international superstars.
Everywhere.
Eddie Vedder was on the cover of Time magazine, hanging from
was
the rafters.
He?
Yes, he was. They had a big argument at Time magazine, Kurt or Eddie, and they put Eddie on, and that kind of started a little beef. So, I mean, Neither of them wanted to be on the cover of Time magazine. But I guess that's only people only say that when they're not the one chosen to be on Time magazine. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So
you know, you could always just get one printed.
Yeah,
that has your face.
That's
on
what Trump
it.
Does.
Yeah. Okay. The next round: lyrics and legends.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. A. Eddie Vedder wrote "Black" in 15 minutes. B. "Daughter" was originally called "Brother."
Mm.
C. "Yellow Ledbetter" has official printed lyrics.
"Yellow Ledbetter" does not.
I know,
have
and that's one of our favorites.
Yeah, I don't think. Hey, you know, don't call me brother. I don't think that's it. So I think it's got to be A.
You're right. Okay. You're right.
Yeah.
Brother is a different song.
Brother is a different song. They do have a song called Brother.
And but, Ledbetter famously has no official lyrics.
Yeah, but I do also know the song about Daughter, and that was also written in about 15 minutes. It was written very quickly, and they did it in a shed behind the studio.
Really?
Yeah. And this is their second album, which, by the way, is the fastest-selling album of all time, is Pearl Jam's Versus, which is the follow-up to 10. Yeah, these guys did it. I mean, they're the great American rock band, for sure.
They really are. Okay, this is another round, TV Time Warp.
Okay.
Pearl Jam A, Pearl Jam once guest starred in an episode of Baywatch. B, Eddie Vedder turned down a cameo on Friends. Or C, the band appeared in a Simpsons couch gag.
I think this
Baywatch, is... Baywatch, right?
Yeah, it's Baywatch. Yes, Eddie Vedder was on Baywatch.
Slowly down the
beach. With flannel chains, wallets, and flannel shirts a-flying. It's definitely not Baywatch. We can be assured of that one.
Yes.
But I do think they were on The Simpsons, if I'm not mistaken. Mm. I think that's it. But, you know, Eddie could have very well been asked to be... Does he have any connection to the Friends? I don't know.
Yeah, well, that was it.
That was it?
That was the case. He turned down the cameo. But it does seem like that Pearl Jam was somehow in The Simpsons.
Pearl Jam has got to have been on The Simpsons.
Yeah,
and all the Simpsons episodes, Pearl Jam has to have been touched on. They did everything. I mean, everything. They're on once a week for the last 86 years. So, okay. All right. I didn't know that Eddie Vedder was asked to be on Friends.
Turned it down.
What?
Principle.
Listen. Standing on business. I'm not going to be on Friends. The biggest show in the world. I'm the biggest singer in the world. Yeah. Okay. But Eddie roundly
denounced his own way.
Yeah, he roundly denounced fame in general. But I mean, I think he said in later years, you know, I just didn't know how to handle it. And so,
which is fair enough. I mean, to go from
zero to
100,
overnight, and everybody's looking at you, and everybody's reading into your lyrics, and it all has this meaning. And, you know, it's really the soundtrack. They are the soundtrack of a generation, part of the soundtrack of a generation. And his songs specifically, the songs that he wrote on 10 and Verses and all these albums, the lyrics are, they're just a little bit deeper than some of the other stuff that was coming out. And that includes Nirvana or Soundgarden. That's not to knock either of those bands. They also had great songwriting and great lyrics, but there's something about the way that Eddie Vedder sings some of those songs, like Black or Daughter or, you know, Elderly Woman Behind a Counter in a Small Town, which is a crazy fucking name. But, you know, you get what I'm saying, is that Eddie kind of, he had like an endearing quality to his voice and his lyrics.
Yeah, I agree.
And it didn't help. It didn't hurt that the guy was pretty fucking handsome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, he's certainly the best looking of the bunch. That's for sure.
That's
even
true.
Though Kurt was pretty handsome.
Chris Cornell was.
Yeah, Chris Cornell was a good looking guy too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they all were. They were all models.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Next round. CD store chaos.
Okay.
Okay. A, stores put anti-theft spider alarm cables on Pearl Jam CDs.
Okay.
B, Verses sold nearly a million copies in a week without radio play.
Okay.
C, some stores refused to sell Vitalogy because they thought the cover looked haunted.
Ooh, I could see maybe any of these being true, but I know that there was radio play for Verses, though I think the number is right. They sold a million copies in a week, but but Daughter was a single. Daughter was the first single from that album, so it had radio play. I remember hearing it the first time that they played it on 99X. But maybe it wasn't an official like release. I don't know, official single. I don't know. My gut tells me that could be true. I could see how people would want to put anti-theft on CDs.
What's a spider alarm?
I have no idea. It's one of those like cables that like like goes around the CD, but I don't see them putting on every single CD of Pearl Jam's.
Yeah.
Like that seems like a big effort to for
yeah,
one band.
Exactly.
All right, so let's throw that one in the trash. So I think what was the third one?
Some stores refused to sell Vitalogy because they thought the cover looked haunted.
No store refused to sell Vitalogy.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. I mean, it's not doesn't look haunted. It's the picture of the book. Vitalogy.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So that throw that one in the trash. So it's got to be B.
Okay, it was B.
Okay, there you go.
Sold a million copies in a
million
week
copies in
radio.
A week without radio play. It did have radio play, but what they're saying, I think, is without an official single mm-hmm. being released. So mm-hmm. people were just, DJs were just picking songs out of there.
All right.
Okay.
We got a couple more here. Okay, round this next round. Retro Tech Lies.
Okay.
Okay, A, Laserdisc was marketed as the vinyl of video. B, Pearl Jam released a song only on Laserdisc as a joke. Or C, the Nintendo 64 was originally called the Ultra 64.
Oh.
So this is kind of more 90s.
Yeah, this is more 90s. Okay. Laserdisc, I don't see why anybody would call it the vinyl. I mean, that just sounds stupid. It's like we're going backwards to go forward. That sounds stupid. I think it was Ultra 64.
You're correct.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
It sounded familiar for some
reason.
The
Ultra 64.
Yeah.
That was the OG name.
Okay, I like it.
Okay, here we go. Next round. Nostalgia Nuggets.
Okay.
A, Magic Eye posters. Remember those?
I do remember
stare
them. I had
them.
One.
Just
yes.
stare at them and you'll see it.
Yes, you'll
see it.
Yourself in the Magic Eye.
Magic Eye posters were banned in some schools for inducing hypnosis. Okay, B. Surge soda was pulled because kids kept mixing it with espresso. Which sounds like something you might have done.
Probably.
Okay,
it's what I do now. It's currently what I do.
C. Beanie Babies were insured by some people for $10,000.
I could see any of those being true, but I think that it's got to be the Magic Eye poster was banned by
that
some
schools.
That sounds
right.
Yeah.
But.
Oh, it's C?
It's C.
Yeah. Beanie Babies
Those
were insured
craze,
for $5,000. Yeah, of course it's the crazy. There's some idiot out there with his little boo-boos are insured right
All
now.
Right.
You know that they are. Yeah. You know that they are.
Of course.
Where's my Dick Tracy collection?
God.
I need to insure it from Lloyd's of London.
Well, and then we're going to put it in the Freeport.
Yeah, we're going to put it in our own Freeport, the lower middle class Freeport, the one where you put all your junk, also known as a self-storage.
Yeah, yeah. Self-storage unit. Okay, next round, cassette life.
Okay.
Okay, A, the first printing of 10 on cassette had a misprinted song name.
Okay.
B, rewinding Pearl Jam cassettes with a pencil was 20% faster.
Okay, all right, that's so stupid.
C, drugstores kept grunge tapes locked up because teens were stealing them.
Oh, I could see either A or C being true. I don't think I've ever heard, like, you know, I have a bunch of posters. I've bought some of them on collectible websites. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard of a tape misprint being sold, but doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I'm going to go with A.
Yeah, A. It was the printing.
Oh, okay. All right. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
See? I could see it being true.
The first printing. I'm sure how many printings do you think that went through? 10?
10?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the...
No, the album 10.
Oh, God. It's got to be on its 89th printing.
It had to have gone through so many printings.
I mean, Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon and The Wall have been reprinted every year since they came out, and they consistently show up in the top 10 album sales. It's crazy.
Okay, I got one more left
here. Okay, go.
Okay, 90s pop culture chaos.
You're making it sound like the 90s. I mean, the 90s was kind of weird. It's kind of wild. You know, I just watched yesterday, Howard Stern interviewing Dave Grohl from back in 2011 and talking about when Kurt died and what happened after all of that. Dave's perspective on what happened all of that. It's a fascinating look at a really interesting time for everybody. And it brought me back to the moment that I heard that on 99X, the moment that I heard that. And then all of the kind of chaos that came after that and who did it and who done it and what's going to happen.
Oh, God, I know.
You know, okay, go ahead.
All right. A, you could buy a Pearl Jam branded pager in 1996. B, 90s teens believed listening to grunge in headphones caused ear mold.
Okay.
Or C, Columbia House lost millions because people ordered CDs under fake names.
Okay, that's C, of course. Yeah. Columbia House used to do this thing.
Yeah.
100 CDs for a penny.
Yeah.
And what it really was, you were entering a club where your card would get charged $19.99 a month forever and ever for like 3 years. So you act, and then you'd continue to get these CDs that they would pick at forever and ever. You never seemed to get your 100 CDs. No. I did that one time.
I did it too. Everybody did.
Yeah, my dad let me do it. Mm-hmm. And I remember he was pissing and moaning for years. And then they, you know, it'd be like.
They kept sending bills.
Yeah, they kept sending. Well, they kept sending bills to charge the card or whatever. And my dad would have to pay it. So he didn't want to ruin his credit. And then they'd send you like Huey Lewis and the News's 12th album. As when you're in the CD of the month club and no one cared about Huey Lewis and the News's 12th album. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was whatever album they had extra of, they would send you. And it ended up being a real fucking ripoff for everybody involved.
It did.
But, you know, hey,
you
got the first 10 CDs you wanted.
Yeah.
Then you got 100 CDs no one wanted. So, all right.
All right, that was fun. You did a great job.
Yeah, no, thank you. That was a good one. I like that.
I like that.
Good job, Chrissy.
I think we need to do some more.
Nice work. Good questions.
Got some other ones.
Prompted good conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. I'll rely on you. You're the game girl.
Okay.
You're the game girl. You go for it. If you need me to help you, you know,
I love
just
games.
Call me. I mean, I could tell you that after the show's over, but, you know, hey, call me. Okay. Call me. You know my number.
Yes.
Dial it up. We don't talk to each other unless we're here.
No.
On the
microphone. Not 100 times a week.
Yeah, 100 times a day. Okay. All right. So, thanks everybody to who's joined us.
Thanks everybody who's joined us
on the streaming and commenting and all that. We really appreciate it. If you are listening, after this has been recorded and you want to jump in at the commercial break on Instagram, and we'll let you know when we're going live, and stay tuned. We intend to allow people to jump into the stream and join the show. And maybe next time the game we play can be your game. You can pick the two craps and a fact or whatever. We'll figure it out.
Or the topic.
Yeah, the topic.
Yeah.
And whatever it is, we'll figure it out. Maybe you can jump in and join us, break down a video or comment on something we're talking about. So please get involved by following us on Instagram first at the commercial break, and then pay attention. We'll give you that information a couple minutes, 30 minutes before we go live. And then you can watch us / the commercial break on YouTube, youtube.com/thecommercialbreak. On Twitch, TCB Podcast, and on Kick, TCB Podcast. Also, you can go to our website, tcbpodcast.com. All the audio, all the video, you can get your free sticker by giving us your address, and we'll send you a free sticker, no muss, no fuss. If you're interested, 212-433-3TCB, that's 212-433-3822. Questions, comments, concerns, content ideas, we take them all. I'll be happy to respond. You know, within the year, I'll respond.
Yeah. A reasonable amount of time.
Yeah. Listen, I know I'm going to get it. And I know as soon as I start responding, I'm going to get it. But it's just, we didn't have a phone for a minute.
Yeah.
Now we do. And I'm sorry. You know, I also have to, whatever. There's a lot of stuff going on in my life. You understand. I got to think about Pearl Jam trivia all day. Surprised I remembered any of that.
That was a good job.
Thank you. All right. Happy Thanksgiving. Hope everyone has a great holiday.
Yes.
I guess that's all I can do for today.
I think so.
Tell you that I love you.
I love you.
Best to you.
Best to you.
Best to you out there in the streaming and podcast universe. Until next time, Chrissy and I will say, we must say, and we do say,
goodbye.